You're listening to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of LA Magazine. Here are your hosts, Brian and Gina.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of Los Angeles Magazine. I'm Gina Grad.
I'm Brian Bishop.
And we have some big old exciting stuff. If you are, like Brian, either interested in the Oscars or consider yourself a betting man, we are going to do a lot of Oscar talk today, which is, you'd think, because I mean, Brian, I don't know about you, but I feel like gender wise, people would think like, oh, I just have my finger on the pulse. But nay, you are the Oscar aficionado. I know almost nothing when it comes to award shows.
It's true, but it's sad. This year I've been a little more disconnected than usual. You know, I got a 7-year-old running around the house,
right. Other
things going on. So I've not been quite as up on it. That said, I am fairly abreast of the odds, of the long and the short of it. Matt Bellany, who is going to be our guest today, is in fact the expert. And we'll be talking to him. It's nice when something centric to LA is also national, nay, international news as such as we have now with the Oscars. And Matt has insights. One thing that I found very insightful he put into his newsletter that he sends out every week was, and I'll ask him about this, you think the younger people don't care as much about the Oscars? Mm-hmm. Turns out they do.
Really?
That's what the data revealed in this newsletter that he published. It was a survey, and maybe the kids don't watch like the olds used to.
I don't know
if that's why ratings are down, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. But apparently they pay attention, and they're into it.
Well, I love that. And also, I feel like we kind of need to start like adjusting for inflation here because, mm-hmm, like you said, like kids don't even watch TV. I mean,
right,
the fact that I have to, a requirement for my 8-year-old stepson when he's watching TV is it needs to have a beginning, middle, and end. Like, I would like you to watch something on television as opposed to somebody unwrap a box of Mario Brothers stuff. So, like, we just need to recalibrate how we think of ratings because it's not that everyone's instead watching your competitor's show. It's that they're effing around on, you know, they're doom scrolling.
Sure, they're finding another stream or another avenue to watch it. Like, I think this will be the first year I'm not watching it on traditional television, i.e. cable or satellite. You know, I switched to, I'll do YouTube TV last year, and I'll be watching it this year. So I don't know how they tabulate, you know, modern ratings. I'm glad I don't have to keep up with that, but I'll be part of the group that's watching it on a streaming service, I guess.
Well, and I miss the old days. I mean, I've just kind of, in general, again, unless I'm up for something or you're up for something, mm-hmm, I'm just kind of tapped out of award shows. And I used to like going to like Oscar parties and they give you the little ballots and everyone eats popcorn and it's super fun. But like, I'm just not the authority that I think we all were at one point. So thank God we have you. Thank God we have Matt to guide us through this process.
Yeah, more Matt than me. But see, I'm really trying to think. I don't think I've ever been to an Oscar watch party.
Are you
serious? Maybe once, but God, I can't imagine anything worse. I'm trying to pay attention. I'm trying to follow along. Honestly, I forget if you were on the Adam Carolla show or not at this point, but were you there when we went to Adam's house to watch?
I was. It was my first year, I believe.
Okay, that sounds
I got in right. trouble for bringing cupcakes.
That was a truly hellish experience for me, not just because of your cupcakes, but also, you know, Adam, as the owner of said house, would pause. We're recording a live podcast. He would pause the broadcast and go on a rant for 20 minutes and then like catch up by fast forwarding through things. And I'm like, I'm dying here. This is not how you watch an award show. This is not how I watch an award show. And yet here we are.
And here we are. No, that was an odd event.
It was odd for you. It was torturous, right?
I get it. So we're going to get into all of that with Matt. I cannot wait to hear about his predictions because I pretty much just follow you blindly.
Right.
I want to see, but Matt pulls rank on you. So maybe I'll follow him blindly.
So Matt, who's been on our show before, the former editor of The Hollywood Reporter, still has, as you can imagine, lots and lots of contacts and
just
people
intel.
Who, Yeah, he's got the ear, and I guess in some cases the lips. Wow, that sounds weird. He's got the pulse of what's going on in Hollywood.
Right.
Good, bad, ugly, and otherwise. And I will tell you from my outsider perspective, that Oppenheimer is set to dominate the Oscars. You're gonna hear a lot of Oppenheimer if you're watching the show. For good, which is taking a step back. You know, this is good for movies. It's good for the Academy. It's what the Academy wants. This is a very popular movie that a lot of people saw. Like, that's been a big problem in the past, recent past, where it's who the hell saw Moonlight? Who the hell saw Parasite? Like, these are good movies, which of course I saw because I host a movie show, but like, the average person isn't getting a babysitter and going out to dinner and a movie to see Parasite. You know what I mean?
If I didn't have a screener, I wouldn't have seen either one of them, probably.
Precisely. So, you know, as our old friend Dr. Drew used to say, reality on reality's terms. The reality is people will go see a movie if it's a big deal or if it's good or if it's an event or if people are talking about it. And with Oppenheimer, you've got all those things covered. I don't think it's the best movie of the year. It's not the best. Sorry. I got a sip of water.
Oh, yeah, he's getting himself all worked up.
I know, worked up.
I thought it was I'm a big Killian Cillian Murphy fan, as most of us Peaky Blinders watchers are, but it was all right.
You're in luck because he will likely win Best Actor. But you're right. I thought it was good, but not great. That said, there's a lot of good movies this year. Yeah. And if we have to settle, as it were, on a movie that everyone can agree on, everyone saw, made a lot of money. Like, it's rare. It's really rare that like these big moneymakers cross over with awards like movies. Like, they tried to an extent to make that happen with Top Gun.
Yeah.
It was very good. Actually, I think Top Gun might have been better than
Top Gun. I love Top Gun Maverick.
But the point is that, you know, that's the kind of movie that'll capture the public attention.
Right.
You know, about your mom and your mom's friends, you know, they don't care about the Zone of Interest or, you know, Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
Despite them being good.
I'm going to jump in here and say, let's not blow our wad, because these are all things I want you and Matt to debate.
Sure.
So, my God, I mean, he's going to be like, why'd you do it all without me? Because you're right.
I feel like I'm setting the table, but you are cool.
Yeah, I really want, because I want to see, again, like, this isn't really my genre, so I want to really be able to play tennis and sit in Wimbledon and see you guys go back and forth about this.
You'll be like the ultimate unbiased jury. Like,
that's
all right,
exactly
who made the
right
best argument?
That's exactly right. I had an insane weekend. Did you?
Oh, no, not at all. This is great.
Do you want to hear about it?
Yeah, I'll just say briefly about mine. Very low key, very under the radar. It was nice. Tessa, my 7-year-old daughter, did the Little Kitchen Academy again.
Again? What'd she make?
It was her third out of three classes that Nana got her for Christmas. And so she did class number three. This time on the menu was curried chickpea salad sandwiches.
Ooh, what? And
they actually made the pita bread. They put the sandwich on. She liked the bread more than the sandwich. But I will say, as one who sampled her wares afterwards, because you bring the food home, it was good. It was as good as anything you'd get from Trader Joe's. You know what I mean?
They took a big swing having that be the menu for children.
Yeah. Exactly. I was like, she's not going to like this. And we asked her afterwards, like, what did you think? She goes, I tried it. It's like, all right, hey, listen, it's all we ask around here.
Take your no thank you bite. Wow. Yeah, because when we were in Hebrew school, we made a metric ton of hummus and a lot of challah. The parents always fought over the challah, even though, you know, little sticky handed children made it, because the challah is great. But I mean, we never went farther than like being able to drain the garbanzo beans and press the button on the food processor. They're actually, your child is cooking.
Yeah, it was a real meal. So
wow.
I was proud of her. And the hummus, or excuse me, the curried chickpea salad sandwich was not bad.
I mean, that's quite a, I mean, talk about exploring your palate. I don't know that Spike Mendelsohn is going to be able to hold a candle to what your daughter made. But it might be a good time to mention, too, that the pop-up dinner is coming up this Tuesday at Engine Company 28. You're going and I'm going, right?
Yeah, if Spike or anyone from Spike's team hears this, they might want to employ my daughter as an intern.
Yeah, she can curry anything. Just ask.
She can curry favor.
I much like the Giada event, I think this is pretty sold through, but it's possible they may have released a couple, you know, straggler tickets. So go right now to lamag.com/events and just see what's available, because Brian and I will be there. Producer Gary, of course, Spike Mendelsohn is going there to watch us cram our maws. And also, I'm a really disgusting eater and it hasn't gotten any better. All I can do now is, as the food's falling out of my mouth, I try to put my hand in front of my face, but I am a disgusting eater.
So all right, fair enough. I won't be looking at you. Hey, is this a good time to break out my round two of my line to Spike, where I go, now what's good here?
I demand it.
I was going to say, he might be really tickled by this.
I was going to say, I want to see what kind of sense of humor he has, if he tries to big time you or if he gets nice and folksy like I'm hoping.
I'll report back either way.
Okay, good. I hope I'm there to witness it. I may even record it.
What's your insane weekend, Mel?
So, yeah, Spike Mendelsohn pop-up this Tuesday, Engine Company. Okay, so I'll just kind of whip through this. I will start by saying that I'm doing this with one ear tied behind my back.
All right.
I am almost completely deaf in my left ear at this point.
Oh.
Hopefully that changes. So we'll just backtrack a little. Thursday, so much fun. Got to go on Good Day LA again, promote our show.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Love doing that. Talked about Claire Wexler and her matchmaking. And I was like, how do I stretch this, you know, segment out? You know, when you're kind of like presenting, I'm like, ooh, let me think. So I just asked ChatGPT a bunch of dating questions and thought that might be good for a laugh.
It's good. Yeah,
it worked out.
Sure.
So we did that. That was super fun. Talked about the show, of course. Talked about our favorite comfort foods. I was shocked that I was the only one who said mac and cheese. What's your favorite comfort food?
I thought that would be like on the bingo card. Like,
yeah.
Is that not liked or is that not considered a comfort
food? No, it just wasn't anyone else's pick. Oh. They're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So I would say maybe like, but like comfort
they were all
food.
Starches. Everyone,
so I can't say meatloaf.
You can.
Okay, meatloaf.
Okay, good. A little protein.
Maybe meatloaf, mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Me, I'm mac and cheese all the way. Someone did steak fries, someone did shoestring fries, and someone did rice.
Now, give me the criteria for a good comfort food.
I mean, is there a universal criteria? Just that food when you're feeling like I'm down, I need a pick me up, or I want to reward myself, or anything that just is like the hug, the food that's like a hug that jumps into your mouth.
Okay. Well, you know what? Then I'll also say I have a soft spot for a banana bread that my mom made banana bread all growing up. Christy makes great banana bread. As of my mother-in-law. So I'm surrounded by banana bread. And also it's labor intensive, but give me lasagna any day.
I love making lasagna.
Oh, mash made in heaven.
I am no longer.
I love eating lasagna.
I honestly don't think it's that labor intensive. I think like because for me, it falls into the casserole category. Mm-hmm. It's great. Dump it, layer, and everybody's happy. So yes, lasagna's a great one. Rice was the other one. French fries was the other one. My other standout though, that I thank God there was somebody Armenian on the panel, because otherwise they would have been like, huh? Truly stuffed grape leaves. Like dolmas. I even buy them by the can at Trader Joe's.
Those sound very good, but I would not put them. I mean, your mileage may vary, of course.
They're like wrapped tight like a cigar, and inside it's just rice and like seasoning, like Greek seasoning. I love it's like briny and lemony, and I will literally buy cans of them if I'm not like at a Greek restaurant. My favorite.
Okay.
But yes. In general, mac and cheese. So that was really, really fun. Hope I can't wait to go back on. After that, I had to hightail it over to the doctor's office because I've had like a little like ear sinus infection, wanted to deal with that. And so I made an appointment with the only doctor that showed up when I did a search on my insurance website. And I thought, oh, please don't be Dr. Nick from The Simpsons. And so I figure they're going to do something that I call an ear fracking. That I don't know if you've ever done, but like they power wash your ear and like so the wax comes out.
Oh, thankfully, no.
Oh, it's so fun. And I'm in there and I'm ready for it. And he comes in and he goes, hey, everybody.
That's right. And who knew flammable and inflammable meant the same thing?
So he asked me what's wrong. I tell him I think I have earwax buildup. Shoot me with the good stuff. He looks in my ear and he goes, that's not earwax.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Is it an Eddie Van Halen living creature situation?
I said, he goes, I don't know what it is. And I said, well, this is took a
that's
turn.
That's not good. You're the guy who's supposed to know.
He opened. Oh, it gets worse. Excuse me. He opens the drawer and it's full like
rat feed.
It's Little Shop of Horrors, like stainless steel knives and daggers and javelins.
Oh, yeah.
And like bing, bing, like the light glistening off them.
He takes
the sharpest, most serrated, jagged torture device and just takes a run. Now, there may be hyperbole involved in this story. Who's to say? Takes a running start, jams it into my ear. Again, perhaps my hyperbole, but it hurts so bad.
Oh,
and I'm like, ow, ow, it's actually triggering my like choke response.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting right here in the jaw, right?
I'm like coughing neck. And I keep pulling away and he's like annoyed. And I'm like, sorry, it's just, sorry. And he's
people forget the ear, nose, and throat are connected.
Thank you. Which is what brings on this noise, which I also did on Good Day LA.
Deep down there.
Gotta get it. So he's doing it and it hurts. And he goes, I don't know what it is. And I was like trying to add a little comic relief. And I was like, is it a bug? Yeah.
Is it or was it alive?
Yeah. Is it moving on its own? So
is it sentient?
Is it controlling me like Ratatouille?
Is it self-aware?
So in my humble opinion, because it's in my head, it's whatever it is, it's attached to me because every time he touches it, it hurts so bad. It's covering my eardrum, whatever it is.
Honestly, Gina, what if this thing is parasitic and it's like partially controlling you?
So many things would make so much more sense in the past couple weeks if that's true. So he ends this epic adventure saying, I don't know, get a CAT scan. And I am in so much pain at this point because he's been jabbing at it. And it starts to hurt really bad. And it starts to feel like it's swollen to the point where, well, I can no longer hear out of my left ear. And this has been since Thursday, last Thursday. So, I go get a CAT scan the next morning and the checkout guy's like, okay, so you want her to do an in-house CAT scan? And the doctor goes, no, out.
God forbid it comes out. I have to deal with it. To quarantine this whole place.
So I did. I went Friday morning.
Wait,
and they don't.
Was there an explanation of why you couldn't get the CAT scan there?
He says he doesn't have the technology. He really wants the whole vibe.
Okay. There's different levels of machines. Okay.
Right. So I went the next morning and here's what I don't understand. The person doing the CAT scan or the CT scan?
I believe the CT is computer tomography. I think they're the same.
Okay. Well, it was a CT scan. I don't know. CAT scan, dog scan, whatever. So I get in the machine. It's super cool. Like the
Do you have to drink the barium?
No contrast, thank Christ. So we're done. And I go, so what's the vibe? What are we doing? And, you know, they're like, oh, I just take the
picture. They can't give you the results.
But that's the thing. That doesn't make any sense. Because the doctor said, once I get the write-up from the CT guy, I will let you know what it says.
Yeah, there's a weird protocol that I've come to know and love, which
I'm sure.
The tech, the person who administers the test is the tech, right? And like they send all the findings to usually if you're like a place like Mink Radiology or some one of those places, they'll send it to the radiologist who will then type up and send their findings to your doctor who is then supposed to give you the results. It's a weird, I don't know.
It's this hierarchy of like, just tell me, like, again, yes. Like Brian said, is it sentient or not? So I can hear almost nothing. It just sounds like a garbled mess in my left ear.
It's so, Charlie Brown's teacher.
Exactly. So I leave that feeling different, as John Mulaney would say, and actually had like a little brunch to go to, but I made sure to sit on the left so everyone else was on my right. I wanted one of those old horns, like those old time, like, and then you speak right into my horn.
How's that? What's that now?
Exactly. So did that, struggled through it, but still had a nice time. Then did a really fun double date Friday, and it had a twist, a good twist, but went to a restaurant. Now, you know, well, you don't know. I mean, you refuse to acknowledge that the Valley is home to some of the greatest sushi joints in LA.
I'll allow for that. I assume, like, if someone said the water on Mars is great, I'd be like, all right, sure. I can't say I can't refute that.
So they chose Kiwami, which is a Katsuya restaurant, but nice. A little more casual. Okay. I'd never been, but now I've been twice in the last 48 hours.
Nice.
And I freaked out. For Kiwami? All you people who want Kiwami, K-I-W. Wait, is it Kiwami or Kiwami? Tomato or tomato? Kiwami. Kiwami. K-I-W-A-M-I. Kiwami. It is so insanely delectable. I couldn't stop thinking about it and then did something about it the next day. Damn. So I'm talking, well, they're known for their spicy tuna and crispy rice.
Nice.
We did the miso cod, which is like the greatest thing ever. Buttery, you know, delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Baked crab hand rolls. A sashimi with
I'm glad
ponzu
to hear
and
this.
Like crunchy almost.
This is great. Well,
yeah, like
one,
French's onions.
There's like,
kind of on
there's
top.
Like food things that take over this town for short periods of time. Like when Christy, my wife, and I started dating and even got married early on, we went to a lot of like Dine LA, you know, restaurant offerings.
Sure. And
felt like 50% of the restaurants offered short ribs as like a
yeah. offer.
And like short ribs had a moment, right? So we're like, all right, this is nice.
It's all over. Yes.
Right now, it feels like a lot of places are like featuring their crispy rice with the tuna on top. Mm. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Not a bad thing to feature. I mean, absolutely delectably delicious. Had a great time, you know, great conversation. But as many people who know me know, I am very anxious about a second location. I want, you know, when I tell my son, you need to watch something with a beginning, middle, and end. My events need to have a beginning, middle, and end. I don't like open-ended evenings. It's not, I get too nervous. I want to be in bed watching Dateline. So I just need, I'll have a great time as long as I know when it's over, when it's supposed to be over.
So, and it's like getting close to the end of a book. You're like getting excited.
Yes. Don't tell me to buy the next book to find out the ending. If I get betrayed on that, the resentment that builds up while I'm sitting there is palpable.
Footnote to that.
But
I've now been burned twice by the Dune movies. Dune ended as like part two coming up. Like there's another one. Mm-hmm. And now at the end, they're like, the blood war has begun. I'm like, it has? We're doing this again?
I may have to say this to Matt too. Our friend Gray Drake, who I've known for years, I was talking to her over the weekend and she said that I actually have it. I should play it for you. But her review of Dune was dust, 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 Dune 2.
That's not inaccurate.
I said our old buddy Adam Carolla should probably skip it if it's that dusty because he doesn't like dusty movies. Yeah,
sandy movie.
Yeah. I might have to tap out as well. But so then they said, do you guys want to go get a drink? And my first thought is, oh, fudge. I only had a Diet Coke here. What do you think I'm going to do there? But I was like, yeah, you know, I like you guys. Let's do that. So we go next door and it's raining and we jump under the umbrella over at Laurel Tavern and got B-I-G-T-I-M-E'd because they said.
Big times.
Thank you. Bars full. Ooh. And we're like, but there's tables open. We see them, bars full.
But please tell me you dropped who you know who I am.
No, in fact, it might have been more advantageous for the person I was with to do that, but nobody gave two shits. So we are standing there. They're not from our neck of the woods. They said, well, we still want to go out. What do you think? I looked at Andy and I go, Foxfire? And he's like, And I was like, I don't know if they'll like it. And they're like, what are you talking about? I was like, what's your temperature on dive bars? And they're like, love. And I'm like, everyone says that until they get to one. Really, yeah. What's your temperature?
There's dive bars that are cute and kind of kitschy, and there's dive bars.
Yeah. Like
you're in a dive.
But like before we commit to this, like sign this waiver. So we said, screw it, let's go. So Foxfire, you probably know this, or at least won't be surprised to hear that is the bar. It's in Valley Village. It's this, I mean, you'd walk past a million times and never notice it. It's the bar that all the William H. Macy scenes were filmed
in Magnolia.
Yeah.
I had Magnolia in my mind. I must have heard this. Yes. And that's a divey old bar.
Very divey. So he said, it's pouring rain and it'll probably be full and it'll be a shit show. Let's go. So we all pile in my car, which is always fun because I had to make sure they knew that the 8-year-old has a satellite office in the back with crayons and comic books and trash and everything. So we get there, we get in, it's busy. I get myself a scotch, everybody gets a beer. And I know I'm wearing glasses right now, but I have an eagle eye for people about to leave a table. And I am shameless. I will sit on their lap before I'll let somebody else get that table.
Gina spreads eagle on the table. It's like, take your time.
I go full starfish. I saw them leaving and my friend was asking me a question. I was like, shut up, hold that thought. Ran over and I was like, hi ladies, are you leaving? Don't clear the tables. We're fine here. So we got, just as luck would have it, the best big round booth in the whole place. Sat there shooting the shit, having a couple drinks until, for us, this is a big deal, 12:30.
Oh my, until the next day.
This dinner started at 7. So yeah, 12:30, we had the best time. So this might open me back up to a second location, but it usually doesn't go this well.
Right. They quit while you're ahead. This is a playing with house money.
Thank you. So I was exhausted, but had a great time. So much fun. Love a good double date. Hint, hint. We still have to put ours on the books. You and me.
You're in charge, baby.
Oh, right. Okay. I'll figure it out with Christy. You don't need to be involved.
I'll just be there or I won't.
Yeah, you just get your little tie ready and we'll go somewhere good. Not too good though. I'm not trying to bankrupt anybody. Sure. So the next day headed down to past the Orange Curtain, deep Orange County.
Wow. What a drive that must have been.
It was, but it was fun because it was a car full of, girlfriends who hadn't seen each other in months. So, it was about almost 2 hours to get down to Newport. Our very dear friend Grace was having her birthday dinner at the mayor's table. Excuse you.
Now, is that actually the mayor's table or is that the name of the restaurant?
It's the name of the restaurant, okay. Which I think is like the most waspy, delicious name.
That's ever. Good.
I love it.
The only way it could be more is if it was the mayor's wife's table. But yeah, I'll totally go for this.
Yeah, it was in this beautiful hotel. Maybe called the Lido. I'm not sure, but like on the water, like
sure.
Grace doesn't mess around. We're all like, hey, who wants to go to Chuck E. Cheese as a joke? And she's like, Yeah, Lido House. Thank you, Gary. Beautiful, beautiful place that we just sullied and soiled in every way by the end of the evening. The food was delicious. The service was awesome. Has a great bar. I posted a bunch of pictures. I don't have any for the show, so it's been a very busy couple days. But you can head over to @GinaGrad and see all those there and go to @BallBrian and not see those there.
I'm so glad you didn't go to Chuck E. Cheese as a joke. That would have been really debasing yourself.
I agree. And Grace, her name says it all. Like, she's one of us, but she's also like not...
Sure.
Her choice. You know what I
good,
mean?
Good, good, good. Her choice not to go.
Exactly. She's class all the way. So we had a great time. Although a couple of the girls who are now mothers, who weren't when I met them, decided that this was going to be, you know, the big night out.
Oh, boy.
Wedding rings were lost.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
People fell into bushes.
Oh, wow.
It was so, to me, because, you know, that's not me. I'm just watching the shit show. And at one point, Kristen, our crazy Kristen, who's a mother and one of the most incredible mothers I've ever met, you know, tall, we call her a tall glass of milk, tall blonde from Minnesota. She would not leave Grace alone, just getting in her face and trying to irritate her. Finally, our friend Maggie goes, Kristen, come sit down. Grace doesn't want to talk to you anymore. Like, just.
Yeah, she had a wrangler.
Yeah, just, I mean, but like everybody had a wrangler that night. So it was.
That's great.
It was chaos. It was fun. But we
plus
were.
Plus, it's a road game. Like, I don't know how many were from Orange County, but I imagine a number of them. Yeah, felt like, hey, when the cat's away, the mice will play.
That was exactly right. In fact, it was so funny when one of the girls fell into the bushes. The other drunk one, that's a great question, Gary, that I will address in a moment, whether or not I wore my Alex and Ani. You know what? Let's address it now, because I wanted to be classy. Of course, I wore my Alex and Ani bangle, as one does. So if you want to be classy, even when you're falling into a bush, wear it. Hey, everybody. What's up? It's Gina Grad. And when you're searching for the perfect piece of jewelry, it can be hard to find a brand you trust. Alex and Ani has been creating meaningful jewelry for over 20 years, designing pieces that connect you with all of life's important moments. With an emphasis on value, there is truly something for everyone. They've recently launched their Everyday Collection. I could not love it more. These pieces are made from stainless steel and an advanced water-resistant plating method that doesn't tarnish. It has the look of real gold. It's beautiful. I love these pieces because they feel so classic, but they have so much versatility. Alex and Ani are also featuring some gorgeous pieces that I have right here, like Black Lotus, this gorgeous Black Lotus charm necklace, and their Stay Wild pendant, and their Wings of Protection necklace that have a classic and vintage feel. See that? And of course, you can't forget their signature bangle bracelets, which I'm also wearing. And I have a lot of their stuff. I have the numerology bracelets. I have the hula dancer to commemorate a meaningful trip I took to Hawaii. From classic to bold statement pieces, Alex and Ani makes it easy to sprinkle your personality into each piece or make a truly meaningful gift for someone you care about. Meanwhile, you can take comfort in knowing that you're shopping with a socially conscious brand, as Alex and Ani has donated over $60 million to nonprofits worldwide, connecting fashion and philanthropy in an easy, fun, affordable way. Right now, Alex and Ani is offering our audience 20% off. So check their gorgeous collection out at alexandani.com and use the promo code MEIDAS. That's M-E-I-D-A-S at alexandani.com. Use that promo code at checkout for 20% off your order. Come and get something beautiful. So anyway, thank God I didn't lose any of my jewelry. So it just so happened that 3 out of like 20 of the girls who were there are registered nurses.
Oh, thank God.
And they were all like, she's fine. The girl's fine. But the other drunk girl's like, everybody back up, give her air, put her legs up. And the nurses are just standing there laughing, being like, we got to let this play out.
Let's see what first aid by rubes look like.
Chairs were dragged onto the lawn. It was messy.
Was the night spent down there?
Yes. No. Okay. No, I'm sorry. We ended up leaving around 10 and drove back up. Of course, I was sober. The driver was sober. The rest of the girls were just out of control. It's so out of control, in fact. Do you know where El Sereno is?
Sounds very familiar.
But not off the top of your head, right?
No.
Me either. We ended up at a Taco Bell parking lot in El Sereno. Not a Mad Lib.
Oh, is that that's a place?
Yeah. It's like south.
El Sereno. La Serena means the mermaid.
Oh, beautiful. This must be the merman.
The merman.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah, we ended up in a random Taco Bell parking lot in El Sereno stuffing our faces. I actually only ordered a Diet Pepsi, which I was very bummed about because I'm not a fan, but I was so thirsty. These bitches, I mean, it was like a seagull feeding frenzy.
Oh my God, they must have spent $20.
Seriously, I think the total was like 32. So finally get home after this just
let me get a Mexican odyssey. Pizza. Get a Mexican pizza.
It was, and then it was like, my burrito isn't in here. While she's holding up the burrito, screaming.
I mean, she's right. The burrito isn't
that's
in there.
Very, very astute observation. Right.
Pretty charitable.
So just to wrap things up, because I cannot wait for our guests to come. The next day, I had a bunch of work to do, but I had Kiwami on the mind, and it wasn't going anywhere. So I, which is one of my favorite activities, I know some people don't like to do this. I love going to lunch alone.
Sure, of course.
I think I know you go to movies almost every day. But
yeah,
alone.
Movies preferably, but especially at a certain, like, if you can set like some kind of counter situation, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm not a counter person. I like to just, I don't want to talk. I'll have earbuds in that don't have, I can't hear out of my ear, and I had earbuds in.
You had an earbud in and it was doing nothing.
No, I didn't want any talking or songs. I just love to just focus on this beautiful meal. I pretty much recreated, but ate the whole thing myself. It was amazing. At one point, welcome to LA, there was a guy dressed like Macho Man Randy Savage outside filming into the restaurant.
That was the ghost of Randy Savage.
Probably, who I'm a big fan of, and Miss Elizabeth. But there were only a couple tables full, and one woman I definitely recognized from TV, and the other guy seemed like he wanted me to recognize him, but I didn't. He kept getting up and being like, are they gone? Are they gone? And like the manager kept trying to like shoo this guy away from the window. I have no idea what was going on, and I didn't care because I was eating. It was weird, but it was fine. It was very LA.
All right.
Yeah. So did that, loved it. Sunday and today and yesterday, all essentially spent not just working, but doing my final term paper for sociology, 18 pages.
Oh my, what's the topic?
There's three topics. It's the uneven ratio of male to female birth rates in China and India.
Oh, but being born, sure. I'd imagine male birth rate is zero, but you're saying males being born.
There could be a skosh of infanticide involved, but it's under a larger umbrella. The decline of the nuclear family, which I would love for you to read my paper on. I was full of piss and vinegar with this guy who wrote it, and taking care of the largest elderly population that America's ever had to deal with.
Sure,
thanks,
sure,
baby boomers. So these were all questions I had to answer about these topics, and it was a real slog, but I got 100 out of 100 last time, and I don't want to rest on my laurels, but I'd like to do that again. So it's been very busy. Finally, yesterday ended with my final rainbow healing out of my 8 sessions.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome. Here's the thing. For people who are on board, like you to an extent, and your wife, and like, you know, she had Meredith Sloan on her podcast, What Nobody Tells Us.
Correct.
And we've had her on, and it was awesome. And basically, it did, you know, the in-person one that left me like literally vibrating for like 4 days. This was a breakdown of each chakra every week. And really interesting, because I don't know anything about that stuff. People think I would because I'm like a wacky chick, but I don't. So it's just an hour long meditation with a group of women that are very kind of full of characters and very cool. And the last one was you go through the entire body of rainbow chakra. And for those of you who are not on board, be proud of me for this. I have a real problem finishing things and not bailing on things and talking myself out of stuff midway. You know what? I'm just proud that I did all 8 sessions and never missed one and had a great time.
Nice.
So were there a few tears at some point? Were there a few like epiphanies? Totally. Were there some sessions where I was just like, what did I miss?
What am I doing here?
Sure. Because that's, you know, that's where I'm at. But like, now I know about the head chakra and the third eye and the throat and the heart and the sacral and the root. And it's great. It's what's the downside of learning something
new? What do you have to lose?
Exactly. So that was very, very cool.
Do we know what's in your ear?
No. I have images of the CAT scan right here, and I sent it to my friend who's in ENT, but he hasn't gotten back to me. But the report isn't in here. It says it's unavailable through the portal. I was going to read, if it comes in during the show, I will read it out loud.
Okay.
But he didn't, he really went out of his way to be like, I look at ears all day and I have no idea what that is. I didn't love that.
Yeah. When the expert doesn't know, you're in trouble.
I thought we had a little bedside manner issue.
Seriously.
But I will. Okay. Let's move off of all that and get to some fun stuff. Cannot wait. Matt Bellany is going to tell us all about the Oscars. I don't know if Brian was planning on this, but I've decided I'm going to watch them debate movies. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to the show, and let's welcome back to the show, Matt Bellany. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Good to see you guys.
You
good,
too.
Matt of Puck News, of course, former editor of the Hollywood Reporter. Matt has lots of insights that we don't have, so let's get right to it. Big week, of course, for you, for Puck News, for Hollywood, international. It's not, I was saying earlier to Gina, it's nice when international news lines up with LA news, and here we are.
Yeah. Do you consider the Oscars international news? I do.
Well, I do. I do, but I also want to, that leads me into the first thing that I want to ask you, which is, I mentioned to Gina what I read in your newsletter, which is this report that younger people actually do care about these award shows. They're just not watching in the same way the old people used to.
Yeah, that's some data that was put out this past week by NRG, a research group. And they say that Gen Z cares the most about whether celebrities win awards of all the age groups, which is interesting because Gen Z is the age group least likely to tune in on television to watch the Oscars. And at least among the people that are interested in the show, 42% of Gen Z plans to watch it live if they're interested, while 39%, pretty much the same number of people, will watch it via social media. So that's the difference there, is that they're just consuming this stuff in a much different way and following along on their feeds and TikTok and wherever. And that's where they consume these award shows.
Right.
Does ABC or the Oscars care just as long as people are consuming the content? Is that all that matters to them?
Oh, God, yes, they care, because ABC pays the Academy about $90 million a year to air the show. And ABC is charging millions of dollars for advertising on the show. And yes, they do monetize some of that content via social media, but it is dollars for pennies in terms of what they actually make. And if the next generation of Oscar fans is being trained to watch this stuff on social media, it's only a matter of time before the television broadcaster says, we're not going to pay you $90 million a year. And then where does that leave the Academy? Because that is the Academy's entire budget. It comes from television licensing.
Well, and that's becoming a quickly outdated way to do things anyway. We were just talking about how kids don't watch TV. They don't watch TV at all. I have to force my 8-year-old to watch something with a beginning, middle, and end, as opposed to somebody unboxing a thing of Pokemon cards. So, you know, they're going to have to catch up eventually. I wonder how that, do they factor those into their ratings?
No, I mean, the ratings don't even include streaming. I mean, the Oscars are available to watch on ABC's digital platform. And if you have one of those digital cable providers like Hulu Plus Live TV or one of those, you can watch it live. But the Oscars are not currently streamable on Hulu's subscription video service. And that is unlike the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl, you could watch on CBS, or you could go to Paramount Plus and watch the live broadcast via streaming. That is not the case for the Oscars, and it has to do with the relationships with the affiliates, and the affiliates want live broadcasts that are exclusive to television. It also has to do with the fact that Hulu was not built on the back of ABC, as Peacock and Paramount Plus were built on the back of NBC and CBS. Right. Hulu was jointly owned by the studios, and then Disney ultimately bought out control. That's the reason why. But it is not very audience friendly, because as you said, most young people don't have a linear television subscription.
Nope.
They, if anything, watch streaming services. Mm-hmm. So if the Oscars are not there, now they are there the next day. You can go in and watch them the next day, but you know, everyone knows who won at that point.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a smaller audience. It's a big problem that they need to fix somehow.
Now, Matt, how many of the last few Oscars have you attended, all of them?
I did not go the COVID year, the train station Oscars.
When
Steven Soderbergh. Yeah, that most people.
First of all, not footnote to that. How crazy is it over the last 6 years, we've had three of the most iconic, like, live Oscar moments, the Will Smith slap, which, footnotes of this footnote, I texted Matt because I was watching along live for the Film Vault. I couldn't rewind it. So I texted Matt and I'm like, dude, was that real or was that fake? And he's like, real, real, real. I'm like, wow. That, the Anthony Hopkins F up and the announcing the wrong winner for Best Picture have occurred in the last, what, 5 or 6 years?
It is quite remarkable, the string of screw-ups. Because you say iconic. The Academy says, holy shit moment.
Yeah.
Because, horrible. Yeah, they, I mean, it is, they are not laughing when people, The New Yorker just did a cover where Barbie was slapping Oppenheimer. And that it was a funny cover. And I was laughing about it with some people. And this one of them said, oh, I just sent this to the Academy. They were not laughing because they want to move on. I mean, it's so embarrassing for them that was allowed to happen. And then Will Smith was allowed to stay in the room and give his acceptance speech and go to the parties. I mean, everyone looks bad in that situation.
Were they just caught flat footed, Matt? Like, did they just not know what to do?
There were a number of reasons why. That they can't prevent it from happening in the moment.
Sure.
There's no way to prevent someone
except an Oscar 45 minutes later.
Well, yeah. Wait a second. You can't prevent somebody from jumping onto the stage in the middle.
Short of having a security guard standing there visible throughout the whole show,
like
which would be bad television. They're just not going to do that. You can't, if someone in the front row wants to run on stage and tackle somebody, they can do it. It's what happens after that,
right,
that the Academy is responsible for, because most reasonable people would have said that in the commercial, you very forcefully yet respectfully move him off stage, get him out of the camera eye, and then you deal with it. And you say to him, I'm sorry, but you have violated our code of conduct. You have to leave the show immediately. Then even if he wins, the presenter accepts it on his behalf. Someone else from the movie comes up and accepts it, because it put everybody in the room in such a weird situation, because the stars were there. They all know him. They were going over. There's a shot of Bradley Cooper like hugging him.
Yeah. And Denzel Washington.
Right. And everyone's sort of coddling him. And then the Academy was so terrified of what it would look like to escort essentially the most famous Black person in Hollywood off the stage like that. They just did not like the optics of two, you know, white heads of the Academy removing a Black person from this. So they didn't want to do anything. And all of a sudden they asked his publicist to go up and say, hey, Will, you know, you want to leave? And then of course he said no. So he ended up staying there, and it was just awkward for everybody. And they all end up looking horrible. And then they have to put out a statement after the fact saying, you know, violence is unacceptable. And
clearly,
and,
you know,
the only ultimate winner out of all of this, ultimately, was Chris Rock.
100%.
Because he was able to dine out on this. Remember, he sold a Netflix special that he did live on Netflix talking about this and was able to monetize the situation. Now, I'm not saying he wanted it or, you know, none of that. I mean, obviously, but
he turned it
around. He was doing dates and he wouldn't even acknowledge it. And then he'd make some joke about not acknowledging it. And you're going to have to wait for the special. And that special did not disappoint. It was the very last thing he did in that hour. And if you played a drinking game with, when he said, and everybody called Will Smith a bitch, this guy called him a bitch, this guy called him a bitch. I mean, we were dying laughing.
Yeah. And it's not over. He'll, at some point, he'll come back and host an award show again.
Oh, sure.
And he will be able to dine out on it again. So, yeah.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to diverge us down a 6-year-old story. Let's catch up to this year. Matt, who are you wearing? No, I don't care. This year looks like Oppenheimer is going to take most of the awards. It's a pretty heavy favorite in certain categories. Do you see, off the top of your head, Matt, any upsets brewing on the horizon?
You know, I don't see Oppenheimer being upset in the main categories. Picture and director are a lock. It's actor and actress that are still the open questions.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'll just give the particulars. Robert Downey Jr., Killian Murphy for best actor at Oppenheimer is favored right now over Giamatti. Giamatti for holdovers, which I don't know, man. Giamatti was really good.
He was, and that would be a nice sort of career honor for Giamatti, who famously was not even nominated for Sideways, which a lot of people thought he should have won that year. I just feel like the Oppenheimer train is going to just, you know, plow through Giamatti here. And Cillian Murphy is the center of that film. Typically in years when a big splashy biopic ends up winning Best Picture, the actor who starred in it also ends up winning. Going all the way back to like Gandhi. But I just think that actress is the better toss up. Because
so this is coming out of the wire. This is Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon and Emma Stone, from Poor Things.
Right.
And who are the main contenders?
Yes, those are two. There are others, but it's really down to the two of them. And I think Emma Stone will ultimately end up winning here because it is the flashier performance, and that tends to be the one that ends up winning. The wild card here is that the representation issue is such a hot issue in Hollywood. This would be the first Native American woman to win Best Actress, and that has been the centerpiece of their campaign. Lily Gladstone is not in the movie as much as Emma Stone, obviously, and some of the others. Arguably, it's a supporting performance. But
I was surprised she was lead actress, but here we are.
They chose from the beginning to push her as lead, and I think it was a smart choice because it said something about the movie itself and the story that was being told in that movie. So it's really too tough to call, but I'm going to still go with Emma Stone. I just feel like, you know, you hear the term brave and fearless and all the things about, you know, she's naked in a lot of the movie. It's a very kind of, centerpiece bravura performance, whereas the Lily Gladstone performance is powerful, yet it's very understated and it's quiet. Exactly. There's a kind of gravitas to it, but it's not in your face like Emma Stone is. And when you are checking the box on your ballot, I think the more in your face performance is going to win out.
It's funny. Those eyebrows alone should win their own award.
Flattering.
No. That's the thing. When you say things like brave, like, oh boy. But it's funny because I know that, you know, the Barbie movie was all anyone ever talked about when they weren't talking about Oppenheimer, even more so than Oppenheimer. And, you know, the sort of comical backlash of a movie with those specific undertones and overtones and Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie being pushed aside for a nomination for Ryan Gosling, which I'm sorry, is a fun movie. It's fine. It's whatever. I don't think Ken needs to be nominated. I think if anyone from that group was going to be nominated, it would be the director. I don't think Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling gave Oscar winning performances.
I disagree in the sense that I thought Gosling was awesome. I mean,
but it was so,
you can argue, yes, him versus someone else, maybe. But in as much as he was one of the five best supporting performances of the year, I think he was.
Well, and you see that often in the supporting categories. The more comedic performances tend to make it in and even win, going all the way back to Whoopi Goldberg, Cuba Gooding Jr. winning in the supporting categories. And the Gosling performances, Ken, was so out there and
for him
and was really the surprise, I think, of the movie. You kind of knew what Barbie was going to be, but you did not know what Ken was going to be. And you know, he sings and he dances and all this other, so I it doesn't surprise me. What has been surprising has been the juggernaut of Robert Downey Jr. in that supporting actor category.
Shocked.
I mean, he has just steamrolled over everyone else, and it is not an easy category. Mark Ruffalo is in there.
There's some heavyweights, man.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Melton, who was great in May, December, did not even get nominated in that category.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, you know, the fact that Downey, and it really speaks a lot to the campaign season of award season, where Downey was out there shaking hands. He was giving these amazing speeches at other award shows. And it really just said, okay, this is one of our greatest Hollywood stars. He's made so many movies, had such ups and downs in his life and career has been nominated. He's been to jail. He's been, you know, in Marvel movies, and he's also been in prestige stuff. This is the capper. He's never won an Oscar. This is a great performance and a great movie. It shows that he can actually deliver the goods. He deserves an Oscar.
Yeah, this could be the Career Achievement Award you were alluding to earlier.
Yeah, that's totally.
That's such a great point, because he is such a fantastic actor. And I mean, talk about, you know, it seems like it's only been, you know, cream cheese for him ever since Iron Man, because he was a punchline for how many years? The poor guy just could not land on his feet. And now he's iconic.
Yeah, you go back to movies in the 80s and he's there. You know, his father was in the business. And,
Weird Science. You know,
it's a version of the Jamie Lee Curtis campaign from last year when she won for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Right.
And it was not really about that performance. She's fine in the movie. It was about people loving the movie and people loving her as a person and as, you know, what she represents, a career in acting and a career in Hollywood, both the ups, downs, and coming out on the other side. And that's what the honor is for.
Matt, you might be aware. Do you guys know that Robert Downey Jr. was a short-lived cast member on SNL?
I do know that. Yeah, one season.
One season, indeed. Now, Matt, you alluded to award season. I read your great piece on the award season awards, where you recap the award season. One thing I wanted to ask you about was you mentioned the pure vanity campaigns, campaigns that don't have any chance of succeeding, but they do them anyway. You singled out directing for the Creed sequel, and it's like, it was okay, but I guess is that contractually obligated, or is that a situation where the studio likes a certain person, they'd like to keep doing business with a certain person, perhaps it behooves them to keep that person happy?
It can be both. Some people do have awards campaigns written into their distribution deal or even their acting deal. That's rarer, but usually when a movie is picked up by a distributor, there will be an awards component, like you must support this movie. In this situation, Amazon is in business with Michael B. Jordan, who directed Creed III, and they want to be in business for a long time with him. So they decided to do this. That's where you typically see these vanity campaigns.
Right.
It ends up reflecting poorly on the star because it's like, really? Like, I pass that Michael B. Jordan billboard every day. And I was like, God, you really? They're still hanging on to this thing?
It was funny at the time, and now it's sad.
Yeah. Like, stop trying to make Creed 3 happen. It's just not in the awards race. But they want to be in business. Same with Margot Robbie with Warner Brothers. Like it was pretty clear after the nominations came out that Barbie had real weaknesses, did not get director, did not get actress for Margot Robbie, didn't get a couple other categories. But Warner Brothers just kept on going in the second phase of the campaign and spending a lot of money and doing the ads and the events and all these things because they want Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig to know that Warner Brothers supports them, and that's going to benefit them. Warner Brothers did an overall deal with Margot Robbie to do other movies with her, and she feels the love for them from them for this campaign.
That makes sense. Hey, Gina, I know you have a hard out, so we'll wrap it up soon. But Matt, I did want to ask you on that note. I know there has, in the last couple of minutes here, I know there's been controversy in years past about campaigns like, you're not allowed to do certain things, reach out to people or lobby to a certain degree. How often did that happen? How close to the edge do people dance? What do you hear?
Well, last year it happened a lot. Remember the Andrea Riseborough situation where this was a movie that cost $32,000 to make. It's called To Leslie. Nobody knew what it was. All of a sudden, all of these big actresses like Kate Blanchett and Kate Winslet, all these people were talking about this performance by Andrea Riseborough. And then out of nowhere, with no campaign, she got a Best Actress nomination. Now, there was controversy about that because the director's wife and a couple of other Academy members were essentially calling and emailing people in the actors branch to vote for this and to talk about it on social media and at events. And the Academy actually changed the rules this summer to outlaw those kinds of harassment campaigns that are
harassment.
I mean, I would call it a harassment. People were getting multiple phone calls and emails saying, please come see this movie.
Yeah.
Please, we'll send you a shuttle. We'll send you a shuttle to take you to the screening.
That's how I landed my wife, a targeted harassment campaign. Come on, they work.
Yeah, well, this one worked. And this year we saw it a little bit. There's an Ava DuVernay movie called Origin.
John Bernthal.
A very small movie about sort of the racial caste system around the world. And she tried the same thing. She had people endorsing it. She tried to get, you know, all these different emails out there to people and screenings and people coming forward. And it didn't work. The film did not get nominated. Maybe they weren't as aggressive. Maybe it wasn't the right people that were saying this stuff. But there was an actress named Frances Fisher who was involved in both. And one worked, one didn't.
Now, I know we were up against it, but there was talk before we fired up the mics that you've been to several of the actual Oscar events, and not just as a seat filler, like I think I did when I first moved here. And you're planning on going again. Could you just kind of give us a little taste of what it's like, you know, from arrival to ending? Because none of us know.
Sure. It's actually a huge pain in the ass. And I say that lovingly. I enjoy going. It's a great LA experience to go to the Oscars. But you have to get in your car. And funny thing is, my wife used to drop me off. We, you know, our little kid would be in the in the back seat, and she would drop me off as if she were a limo or something.
Driver. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to go through the security gauntlet, which, you know, there's only one way in, one way out. Yeah. They block off all the roads around Hollywood, put up fences so the fans or the, you know, any potential harm could not come to the show.
Ne'er-do-wells.
And once you go through this like juggernaut of dogs and mirrors under your car, and they make you stop, and then you have to lift up the trunk, and they look in the trunk, and they, you know, they interrogate everyone. Then they finally all of a sudden drop you on the start of the red carpet at Hollywood and Highland. And then you go through another round of security inside the tent where they essentially, pat you down and make you go through like airport style security. Then they split you off. So the stars and their direct handlers go to the left, and everybody else goes to the right. The left is the red carpet that you see on television with, you know, all the different,
Look over here.
Totally. And then the right is everybody else who's not famous and is not, you know, nobody wants to interview them.
Right.
And then they converge right at the entrance of the Dolby Theater. So you are in the mix with everybody. And when I was at Hollywood Reporter would have a spot right there to interview executives, because we would do photos and we'd do a photo thing of just the executives, which always led to a fun game called Date or Daughter, where you would have to discern whether the male executive was attending with his date or with his daughter. And sometimes it was a very awkward conversation.
Was it ever crossover?
No, it was not. But
we played a similar game at the Grammys. That is so funny.
Yeah, because sometimes they would say, oh, this is Stephanie. And you'd be like, what's Stephanie's last name?
Going into? Yeah.
Would you like some milk?
You try to be nice, be like, Stephanie's last name? And he'd be like, it's my daughter. So like, if we should have known that.
Right.
So then you go up into the ballroom. And even there, it is segregated by class. Because the way the Dolby Theater is, you enter and there are different entrances and exits for each row or for each level. So if you are in the upper nosebleed level, you don't even get to interact with the stars on the bottom level who are going in there. And I've sat in both. I've sat on the orchestra and I've sat at the very top. And it is a different experience when you are at the top.
let me posit this theory. This to you, because I've often said it's crazy that they make the secondary nominees, right? The editors and the documentarians and the whatever sit in the back because it takes them the longest time to walk up front. Wouldn't it make more sense from a TV perspective to sit the big stars towards the back? Because then you're getting that extra 20 seconds of screen time as they walk towards the front.
Good idea. The Stars probably wouldn't.
Let's end it there. Keep going.
I mean, I see what you're saying.
I understand, but, of course, you want Will Smith or whoever in the front row.
Right. And although there is a nice, you know, ultimately, anytime a star trips or falls over someone or whatever, it's a viral moment. You know, Jennifer Lawrence, when she trips going up to the podium, that's still a clip you see everywhere.
Absolutely. That is a prop bet every year. Will a winner fall on their way to the stage? And I'm always tempted, but then you have to read the fine print. It's like, must actually fall to the ground, not just stumbled or staggered.
Oh, that's so a bad bet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're always going to catch the hem of their dress.
Yeah, that's going to be one out of every 50 years, if that.
Right, right.
So these shows are long. And then, of course, you know, when you're in the room, you're pausing for, you know, commercial breaks and things like that. Is there any sort of entertainment going on during the pauses, or is it just schmooze time for the people downstairs?
Other than alcohol, because the bar is open. Yeah. Because you can go in and get a drink at the bar. In recent years, they've started putting little snacks in there. There's popcorn or other little things in there. But other than that, there's not really entertainment. It's just schmoozing. And, you know, for me, I'm, you know, usually tweeting or emailing people or like talking about different things that are going on. And then right after the show ends, everybody hightails it to the governor's ball.
Yeah.
And there is a great selection of food there.
Yeah. Right. They go there. Then they go to whoever's party.
Usually Vanity Fair. Or yeah, shot of Ozempic, then Vanity Fair, or the Vanity Fair party is kind of passe these days. The big party is Beyonce. Beyonce and Jay-Z usually have a party, and that's the one people want to get invited to.
Interesting. Right. Well, now we don't have to go.
Where are you going to be after the show?
I'm going to go to the governor's ball. I am typically too tired to really go out, and I don't usually get invited to the VF party. This year, some of the studios are having parties. If Oppenheimer wins, as expected, I might go to the Universal party, but not sure about that.
All right.
And do you at least know at this point what level you'll be sitting at?
I am on the second level. So you're mezzanine this year. I don't have the great seats I used to, but the mezzanine level is fine. I was there for the slap and you could hear it. You could see everything you need to see.
Wow. You're with the costume designers and the set designers.
Right. Yeah.
Very good. Matt, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem.
Where do people find you if they want to read your newsletter or do whatever?
Puck.news. Puck.news to read me, or you can subscribe to the Town podcast. We talk about this stuff all the time.
Matt, you're the best. We'll talk to you someday soon. Until then, enjoy the Oscars, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and downloading the show. Follow us at Matt Bellamy, at Bob Bryan, at Gina Grad. And until next time, so long, suckers.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Bryan and Gina Show. To get in touch with the hosts or buy their books, hit them up at Bald Bryan and at Gina Grad on Twitter and Instagram, or by email at podcasts@lamag.com. To get connected with LA Magazine, hit them up at LA Mag on Twitter and Instagram. Talk soon.